is you interlock the two.
Now stretch them quite as
soccer and the fifth.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
I felt like a reptile. Like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.
We rolling?
We are rolling.
Nice. Hello and welcome to Full Reptile Radio, episode 12. Episode 12, man.
Oh yeah, 12.
Nearly teenagers.
Nice. Decent. Yeah, last week's episode was where we spoke briefly about the Rosenstreich. I made a card.
Yeah. So we can look back at that. But everything else good? How's your week been?
Yeah, pretty good, man. Current war room is up for this week, the weekend's cards. Mackenzie Dern against Angela Hill.
It's going to be a banger.
Yeah, should be a good fight that weekend. But yeah, good, man. All good. How about you?
Yeah, wicked. Just the weather's getting better, isn't it?
Yeah, slightly, but it's still a little bit, you don't really know how to dress kind of stages.
Yeah, it's a bit catfishy. Mm. England's always like that, though. It's one of them where it's like, oh, you got your shorts on? Oh, how's the rain feel? It's a fuck, mate. I took the dogs the other day, took them for a walk, and literally I got far enough away from the house that if I carried on the walk or if I just went straight home, I'd still be the same amount of wet. And I was like, fuck you. And gone out my way to put shorts and flip-flops on, and it was beautiful. And I don't know, obviously you live in the city, but where I am, it smells like spring. Do you know what I mean? Because it's just
the
green.
The hay fever, oh, man, it's beautiful. Allergy smell.
Yeah, man. And I love it because it's like, I'm not a big fan of dark nights. You know, you have to put the clocks forward. It's like, that's shit. So I like it when, or clocks back, sorry. And it's like, I just like just the light nights.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're sitting outside, it's like 10:30, still bright.
Yeah, I like the light evenings. I prefer when it stays light for longer, but the light mornings, they're a bit of a...
Oh, yeah. When they're bursting through.
Yeah, like 5 a.m. and it's like...
Yeah, I'm not ready
blazing
yet.
Sunlight.
Mate. But
nah, not yet.
Get me a new understanding of it. If you've ever seen The Farm with Clarkson.
No, I haven't watched it.
It's worth it. I mean, it's a weirdly like addictive series. There's two of them, but it's worth a watch. And like,
I'm not a massive fan of Jeremy Clarkson,
I
must say.
I wasn't. I always thought
it's funny. Like sometimes, but
I always thought he was a dick. I just never really got on with him. And I watched a bit of Top Gear, but I wasn't a massive fan. Mm. And then watching this, it's such a different perspective because you go into it thinking, oh, is that bit of a dick off Top Gear? And actually, he really cares.
Right.
And you can see that he's got no idea, but he's more than willing to try. Mm. And he's like, he's desperate, he's way out of his depth. He's got paired with a guy called Caleb that's essentially been a farmer since he was born. He's only like 20 now. And the fact that that is his lifeline and he's not got the star power and there's nothing about Clarkson being Clarkson that Caleb's like, oh, I've got to bow down and touch your feet.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, you're a fucking idiot. And he goes, I know I am. And like he injures himself and he struggles his tits off. But... All for like the best cause. Like he's trying to make a go.
What are they trying to build? Are they trying to like build a, what kind of farm are they trying to build?
So he's lived on this farm. I think it's in the Cotswolds for years and years. And then
Clarkson.
Obviously he's got money.
Yeah.
So I think it was just to be out the way. And I don't think he's always been that celebrity that's like, I
he
need
did
to
always,
because
I watched Top Gear quite a bit when like back in the day. Only purely because of the cars.
Yeah.
Really. But he always spoke briefly about like farming and living on a farm. So obviously it's something that he's been doing for a while.
Well, I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think what happened was it was always maintained by another guy that then retired. So his farm was maintained by this other person that was essentially the farmer. Mm. And he was doing a lot of crops and things. So it wasn't a livestock farm. It was like rapeseed oil and
crop farm.
Crops.
Yeah.
So...
What kind of farm is that called?
I don't
just
know.
Just a crop farm?
Maybe.
I mean, if you know, please let us know.
Let us know, because obviously we're not well educated enough to fucking give you that information.
Could Google it as well.
So he stopped, and obviously with Clarkson, I think he punched the guy at Top Gear and then was doing the grand tour on Amazon. I think it was all like a little bit more calm. And I think obviously someone must have had the idea to go, we'll just film you. But it's probably the most heartwarming and like emotionally charged thing you'll ever watch. Okay. Or I've watched in a long time, just because it's the impact on farmers, and he brings a whole spotlight to the farming industry and how much they're struggling and suffering and what they go through basically. And I was always not a fan of like daylight saving, just because I fucking hated dark nights. And I was like, fuck them, just let's get rid. And then when you see what they actually go through, and it was changed obviously for the farmers, I'm like, I get it, man.
Yeah.
You need that extra couple of hours. So yeah, if you get a chance to watch, I think it's on Amazon, but it's really interesting just to see like that this guy.
Yeah, I never clearly thought about it like that, the daylight saving aspect of it. Is that, that's the reason it was created, is because of the farmers?
Yeah, yeah.
What, and so they need longer days to grow their crops?
Well, you imagine they need to get out there early, and obviously as they're getting out there early and it's still dark, they need to shift the time balance because people still need crops, people still need things. So that's why it was introduced. I understand, that's what I'm led to believe. I mean, I'm definitely not a genius, I'm pretty sure it's because of farmers. So yeah, and it
wasn't for the birds then.
No, definitely not the fucking cockerels. So it's interesting, man. But like, it's just nice to have sunshine and just like, I cut the grass for one of the first times, and the first cut is always a nightmare, but it just feels good to get back into that summer vibe, because once it's here, it seems to have soon gone. And before you know it, they're like, 4 weeks till Christmas. You're like, shut the fuck up. I'll enjoy the summer.
Apologies for the slight alarm in the background as well.
If you can hear that, I mean, we can hear it through headphones, but it is...
I do live in the city centre, so it's a little bit hard to avoid all that, but yeah.
There's currently a heist in progress that we're not a part of, but obviously we can hear the noise.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the apologies, but there's not a lot we can do. Well, we may as well do sponsors before we get into it.
Yep, go for it.
Obviously, sponsored as always by newshirt.co.uk. They have currently got the Street Fighter collection, which is essentially, it's like a pixelated sprite of the characters that you'd stand. I know we mentioned it last week, but they've been releasing them as each day. So have a look, see what you think. I mean, I really like the left breast sort of
detail.
Yeah,
I like the small print front, large print back.
As we are both wearing small print front, big on the back. So yeah, so they're obviously appealing to our demographic. So have a look, see what you think. And as always, Full Reptile. Obviously, we had the camo drop a few weeks ago. I just want to say a massive thank you to everyone that got involved, and also your patience. We had a couple of hiccups with the orders, and it just turned into a whole thing where there was issues with the post office and with orders and so many different little bits that just made my job a bit of a nightmare. But what I am more than grateful for, and this goes back from the day we started, is the support and the patience of every single one of you guys, anyone who's ever ordered. Just the understanding that they know we're a small independent. And obviously, people will still email or they can call me. I mean, if you type into my phone contacts, FRC customer, I save everyone's name and number just in case they ever want to get in touch again. And the amount of people that have rang and said, listen, completely my fault. It's our fault. It's just one of them circumstances. And they're like, listen, no worries. Don't worry about it. It's all good. It's on its way. Just fear not. And I just want to say thanks a lot. I can't like say how grateful I am for that, because to have the stress of it all going wonky and then knowing that I'm letting people down as well is kind of a bigger problem. So yeah, thank you to everyone. We'll obviously have something new coming up soon, but I'm led to believe by my seamstress that there are a couple of camo hoods left, which she kept at hers. Because bit of an inside secret, whenever we do these limited drops, I'm always very, very careful about the amount of stock that I allocate, purely because I don't want to let anyone down. And I don't ever want to oversell stuff. And I don't ever want to find defects or problems in anything and be like, oh, that was committed to someone, if that makes sense. So sometimes I'll save the odd garment back just in case there's a return or there's a problem. Very often it's not been needed. But on this occasion, I think I've got a couple of camo hoods and a couple of joggers. So obviously we'll be on social, and as soon as they're live, if it is the case, I mean, I'll double check on my orders and everything, but once I know, I can put a post out just to say, there's a couple there, if you missed it and you unfortunately missed out, jump on and grab them while they're there, because I know they were that limited, we haven't got one. So they are extremely limited. So if you see them, grab them while you can, and obviously make sure you tag us in your pictures. I love seeing people get their stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it's cool. The gear's always great. Ever since we've, you know, been doing it, like quality and stuff. And it, yeah, it's nice to see people on Instagram wearing it and sharing it and putting their name out there.
Well, I was looking at a hashtag of Full Reptile Family, just so that we can make sure that people can, it's all the same sort of hashtag, so I can grab them. And I just want to get into like doing giveaways and like special deals, because ever since we've started, there's always been a real core following. And obviously you guys know who you are. You've always supported us and had our back. And it's one of them where I want to see everyone else. I want to see all the same people, but it's like, I want to see everyone else. Because there was a circumstance, one of the hoodies, I had to ring a few customers and everyone was awesome. And I was just thinking, it's weird if you ring them up and go, can you send me a picture of what you're wearing? It's a bit creepy. So obviously on here, it's not as creepy. Just use hashtag Full Reptile Family. And yeah, I just want to see where people are, what they're wearing, and they're styling it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. So that's pretty much the reads. That's everything.
Nice.
We've got an alarm going off.
Yeah. Well, yeah, jump on the website though and, you know, go there. And we've got a sale on as well, haven't we? Like all the kind of older.
So there's the previous training tops that are still current, still regular, still nice. But obviously, as you know, again, as a small independent, we have to sell stuff to then make more stuff. So they're currently on sale. So when the t-shirt season's just around the corner, you can get a tee for 10 quid.
Yeah.
That's insane. Jump on, grab a couple, treat yourself,
mm-hmm.
and tag us in the pictures. That's all we want. We're not asking for a lot. I don't think we're asking for a lot.
Summer's around the corner, so you'll get great pictures as well.
Exactly. Exactly. And if there's a chance of you winning something because you took a picture of yourself looking fly in a t-shirt, then even better. So yeah, I don't think we're asking a lot.
No.
Help us out. Appreciate it. So yeah, so other than that, we've got some fights, dude. You watch last weekend?
Yeah, so yeah, last weekend was pretty, it was actually a really good card, wasn't it, considering it's just a fight night, especially the main card. I didn't watch the prelims, but yeah, because it's on super late, and then if you're doing stuff on the Sunday, it's always a bit hard to catch up, and then before you know it, Monday's come around.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did actually watch the main card. Ian Garry obviously looked great.
Mate.
Surprising. That, like, that's what, who did I watch break it down? It was Brad Riddell.
Okay.
He was doing it on Instagram. And you know how he was kind of, he was hitting him with the body kick, like over and over again, kind of drawing that, dropping his hands. And then he went up to the top and caught him with the leg kick, head kick. Yeah, it was just a bit of a masterclass from him, to be fair. It was pretty cool.
And the problem is, anyone who's in the industry or anyone who's fighting professionally, there are those little elements that you kind of, you know, they're a trap or you know they're set up, but it is often the case of, no, it's too obvious. Or surely you're not doing that. And it just shows the level of expertise when someone has got that confidence to rely on a game plan that's essentially an obvious game plan.
Yeah.
But even more impressive for him to put him away. And like, I've really taken to Ian Garry. I think he seems like a really nice guy. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he puts his life out on social, so it's interesting to see. Obviously, there's a kind of connection, just the fact that he's Irish and the fact that he's quite loud and out there. Yeah. And like,
he seems to be someone who's very focused at what he wants, and he knows what he wants. I know a lot of fighters obviously do, but there's just some, you know, I don't know whether it's just the charm of it as well. You know, same with McGregor.
Yeah.
Had that kind of charm around it.
Because the Conor McGregor era isn't that old. And I think because a lot of people can remember him struggling and like his story of coming off the plumbing yard or wherever he was working, he was doing plumbing or something, wasn't he?
Something like that, yeah.
And he was struggling to know that, like, because Ian Garry, I mean, he's grown up not far away from him, but there is a lot of charm. Whenever you speak to anyone who's Irish, I've got a great friend, Paula, I could just listen to her all day because she's magical. And it's one of them things where it's nice to, like, the fact that he's going out there and he's getting these finishes, it's impressive. I mean, especially the last time out, he got dropped and just survived and yeah. then finished the guy is yeah. it's impressive. So what do you think? Do you think he's going to get Neil Magny?
I mean, it's a good call out, I think, because obviously he wants to break into the, well, he's already in the top 15 now. Top I imagine, 15. I haven't looked at the rankings, but I assume he's in the top 15 now. So if he wants to break into the top 10, like it's a perfect opponent. I think it's a smart call out.
Yeah.
Because Magny is obviously massively experienced. He's a hard guy to beat. Like, I know he's not had, I think his last fight he lost against Gilbert Burns, but
yeah.
in terms of like, you know, for someone like Ian Garry wanting to progress within the division, I think it's a smart call out. And I think, yeah, I can't see why they wouldn't make that matchup. Yeah. He's, I mean, Magny's already a big name, but Ian Garry, I think, especially after the weekend's kind of put his name on the,
yeah.
in the division for sure. So
and I think a good Magny, call out,
yeah.
Magny is a good gatekeeper.
Yeah.
Like, I know he's
not nice. Well, I don't know if it's a good term or a bad term. It's weird.
I don't know, man. I think a lot of fighters that I've met in the past have pretty much normally got a bit in their teeth to really chop. Like, obviously, there's the odd fighter that feels like they're continuously supported from the start to the end. But then we've also had experience where you've got champions that feel like they didn't ever feel like they belonged. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think it's a natural stance for a fighter to be, not offended, but like always proving themselves.
Yeah.
And the lower level of the top 10, like the well, 10 to 15, they're always proving that point because it's like, obviously the game changes when you're fighting for titles and when you're headlining. But when you're trying to get to that point, I mean, Neil Magny's had some incredible performances and like come back from near death experiences in yeah. the cage that you're like, this guy's fucking legit. So for Ian Garry to call him out is a big shout. But obviously Magny's very well versed on the ground. So if it was a case that he did drop one to Neil, it's not like he's losing a massive amount, if that makes sense. But I probably would have confidence to think that his momentum and his experience and his skill would probably carry him through. I think it would jump another five, but maybe get him closer to that, justifying a bit more of an interim or a title shot. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Start headlining.
Yeah. We said he was on his sixth fight win streak to the title. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like when you see people like Bo Nickel and stuff like that, do you know what I mean? Like Johnny Walker back in the day, when you see these people burst out of nowhere and like really come onto the scene, I think as a fan, most people kind of don't mind them jumping a little bit, but it's obviously a much deeper pond than that. It's not like you can just go, give him a title shot, but whatever he's doing, what he's doing and how he finished on Saturday was
yeah, that's what I mean.
Incredible.
I think it's in the manner that you do it as well. Like
yeah.
everyone he's fought is finished. I think I have to look at that, but I think he's finished every fight
in the UFC at least. Yeah.
But regardless, his last couple of fights, especially, you know, has been very standout. And you know, if he beats Neil Magny, then he might not be five fights away. It might be two or three fights away because you know.
And it's a big name, big money. And obviously Dana knows how that works, especially in Ireland. I mean, he's still spoken about now how loud that crowd was.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the biggest it could have been. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. it must be very attractive
it's
for
such
him.
It's such a prevalent thing in just Irish community and culture. It's like fighting sports.
That's
so.
It, man. It's brilliant. I fucking love it.
Yeah.
I love it. But yeah, there was, I know you didn't see, but there was Court McGee.
Yeah. Against I saw, Brown. I've only saw Matt Brown's like after fight speech.
Okay.
In the Octagon. What did he say? Like, because he matched Derek Lewis's record for knockouts, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously it was kind of heavily.
Mate, an impressive.
Around that.
I know he nearly murdered Diego Sanchez in there, but Matt Brown, I mean, I know they both had. Him and Court McGee have got a really interesting background, a really interesting story. It was so cool to see two OG dudes like from this could have been on a card in the past 10 years at any point and it wouldn't have been out of place. So to see them both out there, I thought Court was looking really good. He was actually, he was looking like he was catching him and maintaining distance and all the rest of it. But yeah, Matt Brown, man, he's a bit of a savage, a bit of a weird fucking anomaly. Like I think he's got a wheelbarrow company or it's like a fitness company that works with like tools and stuff. I don't know.
I don't know. Every time I see, he's kind of like a real life, like action hero kind of character, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like his name's sick, like the Immortal. That's like one of the best fight names for sure. But yeah, he's just, like you said, he's just that kind of character within the UFC now. He's just like savage.
And he always performs. It's not like you ever watch a Matt Brown fighting that. Because that was, obviously Dan was scheduled to fight him.
Yeah.
Before he got his diagnosis. So it was like, it would have always been cool to see, because they're both, I mean, obviously Matt Brown's, he's into elbowing. Dan's into elbowing. It would have been a real interesting fight, but it was never to be. So it was good to see them both out there. I felt for Court because obviously both of them seem to be around. And like when they're doing the interest, like they're on a 4-fight win streak. You think, fuck, really? And then you realise they've been on the undercards and stuff, and you've been watching it, but you've not really been banking it, if you know what I mean.
It was like Arlovski not long ago. Didn't he go on like a 4-fight win streak before he faced Aspinall, I think?
And you think, I'm sure I've only seen you get knocked out. But it's like I say, it's when there's that many events. So often you think, all right. And I suppose sometimes you don't always register.
Yeah, and the people like in Matt Brown's position, the Court McGee's, like the people older in their career, they tend to like headline the prelims now.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of the times, if it's on at like 4 a.m., you don't really catch the prelims. But
I mean, it's, I don't know. I think I have to get all of it, so I don't look at anything. So I will watch the whole thing, but I know what you mean. Like if you're short for time, and like you say, if Sunday's a bit manic, you might only catch a couple. But on the main of this, I think 4 out of the 5 went to finishes.
Which was
honestly, because like Tim Means, another veteran, again, dangerous, super dangerous dude, came up against Morono, and Morono looked...
Yeah.
He was just not having it.
Morono looked good, yeah.
He was not having it, man. And it was an impressive start to the main card. And then it was after that. So that was, Morono got a finish. Didn't he sub him?
Yes, yeah.
He'd knocked down to a sub.
Yeah.
And so then Ian Garry. Oh, was Ian Garry next?
No. I've got the card on my phone. Yeah. There was 5 fights on the main card.
There was Joe Walker and Anthony Smith.
Yeah, Morono, and then, no, it's Carlos Ullberg.
He looked fucking fire.
Yeah, Carlos Ullberg's another one that looks really good in that division as well, like quietly coming up. But every time he's come out, he's impressed.
And he didn't look like he was nervous or worried at any point about being taken down or
he's
dominated.
Going under the radar, I think, Carlos Ullberg, to be honest. Man. There's not a lot of hype around him, but like every time I've seen him, because he's part of Izzy's team, isn't he?
Yeah, because I think they were talking to Eugene, or they were saying in between, like Eugene was saying this and that. And whenever you hear that name, you're like, here he is.
Yeah, there might be another killer in that division, to be honest. But yeah, he looked really good. And then, it was Ian Garry. And then Johnny Walker, Anthony Smith wasn't as spectacular as I thought it was going to be. But
no, I don't think Smith's been the same. He's not been the same since the John Jones fight. You know, because it
happens to a lot of people there, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I've met Anthony Smith. He's a big dude.
Yeah.
And he's fucking not intimidating, because he's so well spoken and such a lovely... I was talking to him and his wife. Nicest couple you could meet. But he's still a big, towering, intimidating dude. And it's like, I don't know, he doesn't seem... Because he had that house invasion, didn't he?
Yeah.
Where he woke up and there was someone in his fucking house.
Yeah.
And he was like, he said, I might be a professional fighter, but that's still fucking terrifying.
Yeah,
I've got
girls and I've got
kids. And I was like, shit, I couldn't imagine. So I've always...
It's always assumed that he'd just like beat the shit out of him.
But
apparently
choke,
he was like, I think the guy that broke him was like on his...
Off his head.
So he was like crazy strong.
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. And you don't know if they've got weapons and stuff. It's not like there's fucking... Dan Mergliotta in between them going,
get him
right,
a guillotine, check
you ready?
Him
out. Go, he tap, dude. You fucking kill him. So, it's not sent to me. I don't know. I'm only just going off what I've seen, but he doesn't seem the same. And obviously Johnny Walker, I know he had them couple of losses, and he burst onto the scene. I was thinking, this is going to be fucking, he's going to be the next big thing. And then a couple of strange losses and weird stories or storylines that went down. And then now he's got these couple of wins and he's looking good, but also cautious. Like he wasn't running into stuff, you know, before where he was a bit more like energetic.
Yeah.
He seems to be a bit more careful because obviously Anthony Smith is dangerous at any point. So yeah, that was,
well, that's why I kind of like, I feel like Johnny Walker's got a lot of potential because when he came into the UFC, he was very like,
green.
Yeah. Like very, you know, looking for spectacular finishes and a bit like hectic and a bit, you know, not much like discipline in his style, I guess. But then now, because he's had that experience and come off on the worst end of it, he's found a way now to kind of channel that, but also have all that spectacular stuff in the locker if called upon. But if he can kind of channel that into more of a smarter game plan.
Yeah.
Then
it's like the flying knee. Did you see the flying knee that he was practicing backstage?
Yeah.
And then he threw it and it's like he was going for a dunk. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To jump that high with the frame he's got, and it's impressive. But I mean, he was spinning. There was a lot of near misses.
Yeah.
But out of the whole main card, if you'd have said to me which one's going to go to decision, I don't think I'd have chosen that one.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Same,
I would have
same,
thought
yeah.
there's going to be a finish. But did you hear during the broadcast, Dominic Cruz, how salty he is?
No, about what?
Keith Peterson.
Oh, right.
He fucking hates Keith Peterson. So obviously there was a couple of not close
what
calls.
What fight was that? Was it the...
was it Cheeto?
Or was no, he got sparked at Cheeto. It was when it was kind of... Was it the Cejudo fight?
Could have been. Could have been Cejudo. Yes, it was Cejudo. Because obviously it? Cejudo was having his way with him, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And then he said, oh, when he picked me up, it was early stoppage, but he picked me up. He smelled like beer and cigarettes.
Yeah.
And but the problem is, this is on a professional broadcast. Like they're saying to him, don't swear because you're on, was it ABC or whatever it was?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. And then he's just chirping. And he was saying the all nonsense Keith Peterson. And it was like, it was such a shit fucking comeback or like dig at someone that's obviously... Keith Peterson has got none of Dominic Cruz in his head. He takes up no space in Keith Peterson's head. Dominic Cruz's head is full of Keith Peterson. Do you know what I mean? And it's just...
Just imagine Keith Peterson waiting outside to smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, with a can of Modelo, just like, Cruz, you good? Do you know what I mean? Just fucking with him because, I don't know, he just seems to... He was just whining a lot and like it was a bee up his arse. And I don't know if anyone else noticed it, but there was quite a bit that he was just whinging about.
Yeah.
So it's one of them. But then the main was good. Obviously it kind of went how you'd expect.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think it would be that dominant, but it was just like a boa constrictor slowly working his crushing.
Mate.
Yeah. It was cool to watch just someone like absolutely maul someone to the point of submission. I mean, you can argue that Rozenstruik probably should have been a bit more...
Prepared,
yeah. But it's just like when someone's that good at a specific thing and they get the opportunity to take that chance, it's like you're not going to get away from it.
I think the difference is when we watched the week before and you got someone like Kron... Who can do that to you? Because we've obviously both done a bit of jiu-jitsu and you know what it's like when someone is just dominating every part of you and drowning you. And you're like, I'm a grown man. I should be able to stop this. And it's just, and obviously technique and everything like that. I can remember when Dan filmed a podcast with Ross Edgley.
Yeah.
And Ross Edgley is fucking tonk.
Yeah.
He just swam around the world twice backwards. And he was just stood there looking like a fucking action figure. And we went to the gym and Dan held him down with like two fingers and said, try and get up. And as much as he could explode, but it was more the case, he was like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's just like mechanics, how your body.
Yeah. And the physics and all the rest of it. And like when you're using someone's momentum against them and all the rest of it, just... If you've never done jiu-jitsu or ever experienced it, it's so interesting because it honestly, when someone does that to you, it is such an insane feeling. So when you have someone like Kron that can do that, but he can't get past the barriers that are there as in striking and takedown defense and all the rest of it, when you got Jailton, he was above and beyond confidence in all his other elements, that he was like, yeah, Rosenstreich can knock people out with one punch, but I can still throw some attacks, be aggressive, and also take out this game plan. And they were talking about it in the comms, saying, oh, yeah, he seems to be told just to defend. So Rosenstreich's game plan is just defend. And I'm like, in the first round, when they're dry and there's still 4 minutes left, like...
The only thing I can see, I can understand it from the aspect of like, because the whole process of taking someone down and holding them down and just grappling and wrestling in general is like super tiring. So yeah. I can imagine if it, in their head, they were like, if we can defend for long enough and then we'll knock him out when he's tired kind of thing. But it's defending, like, you can't do that when someone's so dominant within that area.
Yeah. And plus, defending, you're not having a breather. If you're defending any position, there's some that you can be slightly more relaxed, but it's not like you sat there going, well, I'm completely fresh now, because you constantly, it's the anxiety of what's coming next, which is a nervous energy, which you can't help but have, because everyone will be, and it's might not even be nervous for some people, but it's more preempting what's coming. That is an energy that's burning. Not only that, within jiu-jitsu, and especially jiu-jitsu in MMA, because of the striking element, there's so many traps.
Yeah.
So when DC was talking about it, going, yeah, so I'm going to be mounting, and then once I've mounted you, it's up to you. You now decide if you want to take a pound in or if you're going to give me your back. And back in the day, if someone got mounted, it was over. Whereas now there's a lot more, I think there's a lot more practice and training of get out of bad positions. So once you're on someone's back, you'll see people with two on one, or they'll lean up against the fence, or they'll try and work their shoulders around to them, or whatever it is. But there's a lot more people that can get out of it. So I know that Rosenstreich's known for having power in his hands, but he's been around long enough now to know that it is paramount that you can get better and better. And obviously, when you're coming up against someone like Jailton, that's probably been doing jiu-jitsu since he was four, and he's now, you're never going to be to that level, but it's always... it's the counter to whatever he's trying to do, or having options rather than just sitting there thinking, I'm fucked.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Time does not go fast when you're on your back. It does not. Like if you're on top and you're trying to sink in a choke or something, yeah, fucking hell, it can fly past. But when you're the one trying to defend something or trying to get back to your feet or wait for a stand up, it just feels like time stands still.
Yeah. And the thing is, those kind of people like Jailton, so it's often, you know, you get into those positions and you kind of stall, and, you know, sometimes the referee make you get up. But he's so good at just staying active, just like little movements and just the slow progression into like where he wants you. It was very cool to watch.
Yeah.
And he's quite scary, I think, for the rest of the division if he can do that to big heavyweights, you know.
Yeah. Rosenstreich's not small, is he?
No.
So that was the big question for me. Because obviously he's been running through people at 205. You good?
Yeah, sorry.
Is the alarm gone?
No, the alarm's gone, but I think there's a road sweeper. It's fine.
Oh, okay. I can't hear you. Fair enough. So he's run through 205, which is all good. But then the gap between 205 and heavyweight is fucking huge.
Yeah.
And obviously, yeah, I mean, it was the perfect matchup to see if he can. Because the danger was always there, but obviously he managed to negate that and then implement his own game plan. So I'm keen to see what he gets next.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because the heavyweight division's kind of, it's strange at the minute, isn't it? Obviously you've got the Stipe and John Jones, which is almost like a celebration. It's like a super fight.
Yeah, it signifies who's the best, I guess, ever.
Yeah, well, it's always weird when someone's vacated a title. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because as much as it's like, I'm the champ, it's like, well, you didn't beat the champ to get there. And I know you are the champ because you got the belt, but it's not like it's been a whole storyline of, like with Stipe and Ngannou, or Stipe and DC.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I think with a few of the other heavyweights that are in there, he definitely poses a massive threat.
Well, I mean, really, like, if we get down to it, the fight to make was always John Jones and Ngannou, wasn't it?
Yeah. Did you see what Ngannou put when John Jones wrote, "You can't call yourself the baddest man on the planet from the other side of the street"?
Yeah.
And Ngannou just put, "Cross the street." And I was like, dude, that's fucking gold, isn't it? Well,
yeah. You know, I've got a theory, but go on.
No, go on, Karen.
No, well, obviously, we all know now that Ngannou signed with PFL.
Yeah.
And big massive news on Wednesday, I think it got announced, or Tuesday.
Yes.
It's currently Thursday of that week, but, you know, yeah, massive news, and it's exciting, and I think he's going to be fighting in, like, 2024.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a super fight, like, whatever that is. I don't
super
know
what... fight league.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so my theory is that when John Jones retires after he beats, or whatever happens with Stipe, they've got to make that, right? They've got to...
Well, you think PFL will be the one,
like,
to
it's
do
almost
it.
Like Ngannou's, like, teasing John Jones a little bit, like, guaranteed £2 million. I mean, I don't know what he's getting paid at the UFC, but to kind of put that out there, it is, you know, it's got to, especially for someone like John Jones, it's got to be tempting at least, or it's got to be, well, you know, we can put on like the biggest fight.
Yeah, I think just the fact that the PFL have like acquired Ngannou and sort of given him the reins to whatever and are basically working with him rather than him working for them.
Yeah,
they're working together, which is gold, because obviously Ngannou's been in a bad patch, and he now, his whole childhood and his life before fighting was terrifying for anyone else. So obviously for him to go through the ringer at the UFC and do whatever he did there and then now come over here, like just for fucking style points, someone at the PFL would be like, oh, fuck it, why not? And I think John Jones would be daft not to, but it would make it like PFL's already on the map and he's making big names, big moves. It's getting really good fighters. It's a great event to have something like that, because I don't know how many fights John Jones has got left. Is this his last one, or is it a contract where he said, I've decided I might retire after this fight? Because we've had it in the past where fighters have retired.
Oh, you can't fight for anyone
else,
can you?
And they're still under contract with the UFC.
That's true.
Whereas, like with Nate fought his last fight and left the UFC.
Mm.
So he's free to do whatever he wants. And obviously they have said that Ngannou can box, which is cool, because why the fuck not? And obviously he's got a fight in the PFL. I mean, the only thing that concerns me more than anything, because I really like Francis Ngannou, is what if he loses? Like, he's not fought for a long time now. And obviously, whoever he's going to fight is going to be a hungry motherfucker that's very talented.
Well, this is the thing, because he's not going to be put, I mean, from my understanding, he's going to be put in the Super Fight League, right? So that's the likes with, like, Jake Paul as well. So it's almost a separate league to, I think, like the normal PFL heavyweight division. So unless the winner of the heavyweight division that season goes then to face Ngannou after that. But I think it's more of a setup for people maybe outside the PFL to step in and fight Ngannou. I'm not sure if he's going to be put in, I might be wrong, but I'm not sure if he's going to be put into the same pool as like the current heavyweights. Okay. But that's why I think, you know, obviously the John Jones thing might come up. But like you said, I know he wants to box first. I think he spoke about like the Anthony Joshua potential fight and stuff like that. And
I'm still concerned, aren't you?
What, for Ngannou or Joshua?
Ngannou, because it's not just punching. Boxing's not just punching at all. Mate, and I know they call it a sweet science, but it is. The movement.
Yeah, but it's just Ngannou is probably just going to bum rush him and knock him out.
It would be incredible, man. But I can also see him waiting all this time, because he's only 36. And like, I mean, we remember him against Derek Lewis.
Yeah.
And that was strange.
Yeah.
And obviously we saw that he got
I think he was a different kind of fighter then, though.
Maybe, but it's still the same person. And obviously boxing, it's such a different thing. The footwork, maintaining your stamina and your breathe, everything is so different. And the rounds are different. There's just so many bits that I'm not saying that I would think that Anthony Joshua would spark him, but Anthony Joshua has played in that pool a lot longer than Ngannou. So I don't know. I want it all to work out really well for him, because obviously he's made a mark. And you can always tell when someone's doing something that's quite brave, because like John Jones, even though they had a nice picture together and they were like having each other's back, was quite detrimental and derogatory about it. You think, you often see that when someone is being brave, that someone else in the similar position that wasn't perhaps as brave as them to do that, then instead of them being supportive, they turn it into a like, oh yeah, well, shit, shouldn't have done it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's, I don't know, it's strange to watch people fight without actually physically fighting, because
yeah,
there's ways to read it. Like really randomly, I'll never forget, I used to go get my hair cut at this guy's barber's, and it was like a big barber's in Derby. Really, really well known in the market hall. And always went to see the same guy. And this one other guy left and went and started himself and set himself up. And the guy who used to cut my hair was so fucking like pissed at him. Oh man, after everything, he's fucking done this and done that. And I was like, yeah, well, what's the deal? And he was like, well, he didn't think he was getting this and he didn't think that he was getting the right opportunity. It's very similar, but in a hairdressing world, which is kind of fucked up. So fast forward a year and my mate set up himself and went on his own. And you could see that all that frustration was actually his own internal anxieties affecting him, because he was like, oh, I should have done it first. Or like,
yeah,
he'd
yeah.
been braver to do something that I feel like I should have done myself. Yeah. And
a bit of resentment, jealousy almost.
It is that jealousy, that fear, that like anyone taking a chance ever, there's always two options. You sink or swim.
Yeah.
And it's extremely difficult to ever like foresee what's going to happen unless you've got a big backer like the PFL. And I think that's why it's really easy for like the UFC to poo-poo it, or any other organisation. Oh yeah, well, it's like the negative connotations that they go to. Oh yeah, well, he's settled for them, or he's done this. It's like, no, he's not, man. He's made a point of getting exactly what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I feel like he deserves the best. So like, if he can maintain his MMA career, because he needs to keep fighting. Like, he's such a big fucking engine that you can't just step in and out, I don't think. And I know that because he's been beaten in the past, like with his wrestling. So Stipe exploited that. So when he went to fight Stipe again, it was very heavy on takedown defense. Now, because he's... When did he last fight? Was it like a year ago?
Who, Ngannou?
Yeah.
He last fought against Cyril Gane just over a year ago, maybe? Yeah.
So he's not going to fight till 24?
No. Well, no, he's going to box before then.
Is he definitely?
I'm pretty sure. I think that's what the plan is. I think he wants to box like sometime later this year, and then, well, maybe, you know, like around Christmas. I don't know. It's hard to kind of really know. I mean, they might, because what did it say? Did it say early 2024?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that could be January.
Yeah. But it's still it's a long time. Though,
yeah,
right?
I get what you mean. Yeah. It's still a long time to be out. And especially, like you said, I think to be physically, you have to kind of keep it going.
By being in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like to train at the gym is different. To get in there and experience everything of all the emotions. So I just hope he gives himself the best chance. And I mean, the thing is, he's built like a fucking truck. So he's already halfway there.
Yeah.
But he's...
I think the PFL and I think him will be very smart in terms of who he faces.
Okay.
And I'm just, you know, from a marketing perspective, you're not going to... But then, you know, the other day, what was it, Tyson Fury came out and said, was this quite recent? I don't know. But he's obviously said that he wants to maybe face him in the cage as well. And
in the cage?
Yeah. Yeah, Fury came out. He said if he wants a big fight against the...
Were you almost going to do a Fury impression then? Go on then.
I'm not going to do
You're not
that.
Even going to say Dosser? Nothing?
No, not at all.
I honestly thought
I'm
you were
going to... I'm an Irish gypsy, is not the greatest for sure. He's not even Irish, is he?
Who? Fury?
Yeah, he's not Irish, is he?
Yeah. Well, he's a traveller.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a gypsy.
He's a gypsy king.
My gypsy.
You get away with saying gypsy if you say the word king afterwards. Right. That's all right. But otherwise, we might have to put a disclaimer.
My gypsy king isn't that great.
No, we love Tyson Fury.
But anyway, he obviously said that called him out and said if he wants to fight him, and then potentially in the cage as well.
I mean, that would be an amazing pantomime. It would be fantastic. Because the thing is, I'd like to think that they are bantamweights that could beat Fury in the cage. Just because, like, we saw it with James Toney.
I think it's only going to be that kind of... I mean, obviously, Ngannou did that against Cyril Gane, didn't he? Just absolutely wrestle-fucked him.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I feel like Tyson Fury, he's a fighting man, isn't he? I think he...
He is, but it's... But bare knuckle, and when he says he's the Gypsy King, there was the undefeated Gypsy King that was called Bartley Gorman. And that is who Tyson Fury, like, he comes down from. And honestly, it's all about having a fair fight. It's not about grappling. You're not holding, you're not hugging, you're not, there's no joint manipulation. It is, we're going to have a box. We're going to have a fight. So I'm not saying they can't, but putting something on their back that's not used to being on their back is a lot different.
Mm.
Like, he could fight his way out of a fucking phone box through 50 people, I'm sure. But it's the, I don't know, the level of grappling and the level of the mix in the martial arts nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, even a leg kick. Like, there was a famous fight back in the day. And a boxer took a leg kick and was just like, whoa, you're fucking cheating. Whoa, oh. And like literally he thought that they'd done something to him. And anyone that's had a calf kick or like just taken any sort of leg kick, like, these are your weapons and they are powered by your engine. And once your engine is taken away, your weapons aren't as powerful. So like for him to take a leg kick from Ngannou, who has been practicing that shit for a long time.
Yeah.
On a leg that's not necessarily prepared to be taking those kicks or know how to check the kicks.
Yeah.
It, like the boxing thing is one-sided when it's a boxer against MMA, and the MMA is one-sided when it's in a cage. And that's, it's like saying that a cricketer is going to be shit at football. Probably. But he'll have good stamina and he could throw the ball far. Yeah. But it's not relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I'm keen to see Ngannou do something in PFL and just give them that platform back of they've invested in him. And just to see that, like, then make a massive show of it.
Mm.
And then especially if he goes in there and performs like he has done the last couple of times, and obviously then keeps chasing Jones, because John Jones's relationship with Dana has always been a bit tumultuous anyway, just because, well, he's not always been the best, and Dana's probably not always been the best. So it's always been a bit of a fucking shitty stick. But as much as he's been loyal to the company forever, he's gone above and beyond in achieving what he's needed to achieve. And he's kind of on that swan song of like, look, I've cleaned that out. I've sorted that. I've defended titles multiple times. And all right, yeah, give me Stipe. No worries. It would be fantastic to see John Jones then just appear on a PFL poster and be like, I mean, imagine if he went and beat him.
Mm. Yeah. I can just see there's a lot of potential in Ngannou. Signing with the PFL, and I think there's a lot of potential for the PFL, you know, to bring other big names into it as well.
Yeah.
And it's going to be fun to see for sure.
I just don't know how much, like, the only thing that ever bothers me is when you look at, like, when Pride finished, Dan Henderson came over, fought Rampage and lost. So he was pictured at first with both the Pride belts. So this guy was fucking tough. Obviously, I don't need to tell you who Dan Henderson is, but it was kind of then, all right, well, it's finished. Mm. Same as when DJ went to one and got beat. You're like, hold on a fucking minute. He's meant to be fucking Mighty Mouse. Same as Sage Northcutt. And it's happened so many times because, well, Eddie Alvarez going to one. Like, they're not the same.
Mm.
And I think I'm always like, I don't know. I'm always keen to see what happens.
Yeah.
Because obviously we mainly talk about the UFC, but I know there's other organizations, and it's a different experience. And mm-hmm. like, what does that do to if Ngannou comes in and drops a fight, then is that bubble completely burst, or has he got an impenetrable bubble, a bit like Connor? Because Connor could get beat 10 times and people keep tuning back in because he's gonna be backing himself, whereas Ngannou's a bit more respectful and like, yeah, things didn't quite work out. It wasn't the best. But it's not like he's calling everyone a prick. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think the other thing, obviously, him joining the PFL, you know, the whole thing with the fighter pay and, like, you know, he was a big advocate for that and, yeah. You know.
And him getting PFL Africa.
Yeah, and, yeah, he's going to be, I think he's going to be head of PFL Africa, as, yeah, was it?
Which, in itself, could be fucking ginormous. Yeah, yeah, you could have a PFL Africa card probably every week.
Yeah.
Because it... Whenever you look at any territory that hasn't been, not exploited, but hasn't been used to the capacity just yet. Like, at one point, it was illegal. Is it still illegal in France? It's not now. It's all right now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's legal, so it's legal,
obviously,
yeah.
Areas in that. But, like, you imagine how many French fighters were trying to bang the door down, but the UFC only had a certain capacity. It's the same with Africa.
Mm.
Like, the amount of African champions we've seen currently and in the past and the ones that have come through, there's still hundreds of others.
Yeah.
And like, if you can imagine even if we called it a PI, I know it's not the UFC, but like if there was an African training center.
Wasn't that the plan with Ngannou and the UFC at one point? Weren't they going to like, because they had the three kings, you know, it was Izzy and Ngannou, the whole plan to kind of explore that
but
region.
But is that where the UFC's, if we call it greed, raised its head a bit early? Because someone like Ngannou, who is quite new to money, and I think it's one of those things where your priorities are a lot different in life when you haven't had the privilege of getting through life by being able to just, money's not a problem. So he's probably sat down, and obviously the difference is, I've had this in my life where you can feel like someone's taking advantage of you or they're playing you for a fool, and obviously you're not. So with someone like Ngannou, if they're selling him, yeah, we're going to do this and this and this and this. Yeah, what about for this and this? What about for me? How does this look? And it's not all about money just for him, but it's like secure purses and different things for different people. And they're like, no, we like making money. We want to keep the ball.
Yeah.
But we want to let you play with the ball every now and again. Whereas I think that's given him a fantastic inside look into the business side of things. And then he's gone to PFL and he's gone, I'd like this. And they've gone, yeah, no worries. And it's obviously worked a lot better for them because the PFL, it seems to have a better knowledge of fighter relations, in my opinion, just from what I've seen. Just obviously Ray Sefo has been around the industry forever.
Mm-hmm.
So to have that guy in your corner is a lot different to having a sheer businessman that is money-orientated.
Yeah, 100%.
So hopefully, man, I'd like to think it could be the biggest thing ever.
If you could pick any... Well, on his next fight, who would you want to see in the octagon? Well,
in the cage?
In the cage against him.
Just whoever PFL's got as current champ.
You think?
Yeah, man. Just look, you can't be the best in the world or the baddest man on the planet by waiting or picking.
Well,
or,
out of every scenario, potential scenario.
What, if you could fight John Jones?
Well, I don't mean just John Jones, but you know,
yeah,
if
man.
You consider every avenue, every potential matchup.
Well, this is where I think Bellator might have a massive opportunity, because obviously Bellator and UFC, they don't always see eye to eye. It's quite clear. I mean, when Strikeforce was acquisitioned, Scott Coker was still the head of Strikeforce and was working for the UFC.
Yeah.
Now, Scott Coker's been around forever. And if you speak to anyone who's ever worked with him, they tell you what a nice guy he is and how good he is at his job. He's not as brash as Dana, but he's still as impactful to their lives, not necessarily to the media, but he's meant to be a top bloke.
Scott Coker's good. When we've ever covered Bellator events, he's very much
more
of an approachable person anyway,
yeah,
for sure.
Which is good, right? And he's not got the... Like, you know, sometimes when someone will go, oh, it'd be great if you could have this from the UFC and that from Bellator. Or like, there's always the talk about it, like with the Pitbull brothers. Like, could they do well in the UFC? But it's never, like, come to fruition. Whereas perhaps with Bellator, they may be more open to, like, a PFL Bellator sort of deal. Because what you got to remember is, while ever the UFC is always going and this machine is churning out, the people that they get rid of have got somewhere else to go. And then when they've been treated a certain way, which has been getting more and more regular by the UFC, then they end up with a different outlook on the sport and the business in their own life. So when you've got a lot of like-minded people like that, it might be that Scott Coker and Sefo sit down and go, why don't we do this, man? Why don't we do that? And it's like the potential and the crossover, the opportunity of doing that would be superb. Mm-hmm. And that would give the PFL and Bellator a real unique selling point, because it's like cross promotion. Mm-hmm. Do you know, like WWE and or WWF and WCW back in the day, sort of having a bit of a scrap. Like I would have fucking been jazzed for that as a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, I mean, for Ngannou, I just want him to stay relevant, like not even justifying his position, but he is the best UFC heavyweight at the minute. Obviously, John Jones is there. Like, for them to fight would be good, but he's got to keep doing it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if he's fighting whoever is the best in PFL. You've got to stay relevant. You've got to keep doing it. You can't just wait about and be like, I might fight, or I fancy Anthony Joshua, or I've heard that Michael Jordan's going back to basketball. I'm going to see if I can do that. It's like, you are still a ranked heavyweight. Let's see your best. Or do you want to see him fight?
Well, I mean, in an ideal world, I'd want to see the Jones fight.
But who's your next pick then? If John Jones stays fully loyal to Dana, and Dana, like, obviously gives him a load of money.
I guess probably, but you never know, the PFL might snatch up someone else, you know,
this
during that time, you know, someone else who's a big heavyweight might join the PFL, same as Ngannou has, especially with that guarantee of $2 million for the fight. So, you know, if someone, even someone at the UFC who's close, out of contract, and could also jump on that kind of opportunity as well, it doesn't have to be John Jones. But I just want to see him against someone. I don't want to have a solid expectation on that fight. I don't want to see him face someone that I probably know he's going to beat, or like, I'm just like, oh.
Like an exhibition.
He's going to knock him out, yeah.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I'd want to see some, like a bit of an interesting matchup, which is why
Well, that's why it's got to be the top of the tree. It doesn't matter if it's
the
PFL.
I guess the PFL, like the top contender in the PFL would also make sense as well, because off the back of that, they can also make a massive name of themselves. And I know Ngannou is very much pushing, you know, other fighters to be successful. So if there's an opportunity for someone else in the PFL to make that name for themselves, and yeah.
And the $2 million, is that for any opponent in his next however many fights, or is it the first one?
I'm not sure. I didn't really read into it much. I just saw the
I couldn't find a headline. Lot. I couldn't find like a, I didn't want to see his actual contract, because obviously I'm not going to see that. But I think it's a really clever marketing thing. It's genius, because the amount of noise that's been made about Ngannou by everyone, you're going to tune in. So if you've never watched the PFL, or you've never seen it, they can make that back. So they know they've covered their back with, and then the hype of Ngannou, and especially then who they've also got on the undercard that they could sell this massive event. I'd love to see like him have a couple of fights in the PFL, and then maybe the PFL Bellator thing. It could be gold, because the UFC have always had fantastic fighters, and they have always put on great fights, and they have got solid champions, but they've never really entertained that. Well, who says your champ's better than my champ?
Yeah.
Dana's confident enough. And
it's automatically assumed,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. And he's always outwardly spoken about it, like, well, fucking prove it. But I just think it could be such a cool thing. Mm-hmm. Like the Champions League.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know a lot about football, but you've got Premier League and they're all UK. But then when you've got the Champions League, they're playing
all the champions.
Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily mean that a British team always wins, or a Spanish or whatever, but people tune in. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It doesn't do any damage.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's the most watched tournament in the world now. I think it overtook, I don't know if it was higher than the World Cup or the Olympics, but yeah, the Champions League's like massive.
Yeah.
Like a huge, huge tournament.
So it's silly not to.
Yeah.
And then even if you got Bellator, PFL, One, Rising, there's loads.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously a lot of them have fought for whichever. But I mean, even if you pitched it, like, I can remember years ago, I think it was Josh Koscheck that headlined, and it was Canada versus America. It wasn't a Ultimate Fighter. It was on like an army base.
Right.
It was a fucking sick card.
Yeah.
Sick fighter. Like David Loazza was on there. I don't know if you know David Loazza. He was a big trainer with GSP. He was called The Crow. He was a fantastic Canadian mixed martial artist back in the day. Koscheck was on there. I think it was on a military base, and it was just a fucking sick card. It could be the same.
Mm.
And like, I don't know, I'm keen to see the best fight the best regardless. And, yeah. And that's the whole reason the UFC was set up. Can this guy beat that guy? And now you've got champs in both.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it anyway. And obviously let us know what you think on the Ngannou situation, who you want to see him fight or what you think is going to happen next. You know, it's always interesting to kind of speculate.
How interesting did you think that Dana released the news that he was going to put the BMF belt on the line?
I was going to mention that to you. I mean, I think it's pretty cool. I think this fight didn't even really need that anyway, personally. I think that it still would have been great regardless of BMF belt being put back on the table. I kind of thought that was just a one-off thing. I thought that was just like Nate and Masvidal, because the thing is with those two, they both played that role as like the baddest. Gaethje and Dustin, they're obviously, of course, they're fucking
phenomenal fighters.
I can't say that word.
Phenomenal
fighters, but I'd never really put them in that bracket of like BMF kind of thing. And I think it's a bit novelty.
Yeah, and it's a bit, it's been picked up and dropped. It was funny or interesting at the time. Masvidal's effectively lost it enough times since, but it was never brought up. Justin Gaethje was once given a interim belt, and he threw it on the floor. So, like, I don't know. It feels a bit like, I tell you what it feels like. When I first got my Mega Drive as a kid, right, I wanted to play Sonic, and I had a little brother. Still got a little brother. I've got three of them. But this one at the time was about six. He used to get on my tits. Love him to bits, but I wanted to play Sonic. It was Sonic 1, so there was no two player. So I used to give him another joypad, and it would keep him quiet. And he'd sit there.
The unplugged one?
Yeah, it wasn't plugged in. He thought he was playing, and he was like, I'm really good at this. I was like, you're the fucking man, crack on. And obviously I'm playing, but it just distracted him.
Yeah.
And thinking about it, it was a shitty thing to do. But at the same time, I got what I wanted. So it was like the same sort of thing. Like the BMF thing isn't really a thing. It's not really a controlled, managed, or even focused upon thing. It was funny at the time. It was quirky. So for Dana to sort of go, oh, we need something. We need something big. Ngannou's gone and done us. What can we have? Bring the BMF back. You fucking got it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It seemed awfully good timing, didn't it?
Right. Well, he got 2 for $10 when he had a mate. So he's like, well, we've got another belt. Masvidal ain't going to give that back. And if anything, it'll just make Masvidal come out of retirement and say, well, I'm actually fucking BMF. And you think, you've lost this 3 times since you won it, dude. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, it's funny that you say that. Obviously, when they announced it, it was kind of parallel to the Ngannou news as well. But I was just imagining in my mind, you know, when someone like Dustin Poirier is showing someone around there when he's like 60.
Yeah.
And he's showing his grandkids his belts.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, UFC interim, you know, lightweight belt, you know, whatever. And then amongst all the promotions that he's fought for. And then that one's just in the corner. Like, what's that one, granddad? Oh, that was when I was the baddest motherfucker.
That was when Ngannou signed with PFL. Uncle Ngannou? Yeah, Uncle Ngannou. Yeah, that's the one. He signed with PFL and Dana shit the bed. So he just threw that out there. Can we wear it? No, don't touch it, mate. You sure? Yeah, it's cheap. It'll turn you green. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly, man.
And but I don't know. It didn't need to happen.
Nah.
I don't think.
I think this fight warranted, if anything, it could have been promoted as like the next title.
Yeah, number one contender. Fight. Yeah. No, and the thing is, both these fellas have had interims. They've both been about. They're both fucking knocking at the door. They're both good. There's no disputing that. And sometimes you can go back to the old school embedded hype, the Conor, Aldo fucking, let's get some promotion into that to make me excited about it. Because we're talking about 291. We've not even had 289 and the other six cards in between. Yeah. So I'm buzzing for it because it's Gaethje and it's Poirier and they're fucking amazing fighters. But it just, to me, I don't know. I don't know if when they got it, they sort of rang each other and, yeah, has Dana rang you? Yes, mate. Yeah. Yeah, he rang me. He said about the BMF belt. I know. Did he say that to you as well? Yes. I thought he was fucking good. I don't know if he's pissed up. I'll wait till he rings back. Yeah, because do we want a BMF belt? Because it's Nate and Masvidal's thing.
Yeah, they fitted that whole...
It's their thing.
That was good at that time because I felt like it matched those guys as fighters.
And it's a bullshit, silly thing that was funny and it was quirky and it worked. And the even better thing was the fact that Nate didn't get finished. Was it a cut that stopped it? So he could always protest, well, I never got beat, which is cool, man. That's... Those sort of egos need that sort of result.
Yes.
I don't know. It just seems strange. And obviously the amount of shit that they could release or do or like promote, it just seemed.
Yeah, it was certainly just, as you said, it was good timing. But, and it just doesn't warrant, this fight doesn't warrant that, no. I don't think. But regardless of that, I think have you seen the rest of the card? Like the card's amazing for that event.
Yeah, I mean there's quite a few coming up which you've got decent fights.
So that's July, isn't it?
Yeah.
So is that International Fight Week? Is that the card that's going to be the?
I would have thought so.
Yeah. Well, do they have two pay per views that weekend?
They've done it before where they've had three, but when we were there, there was one.
There was one when we were there, but I think. There's like a midweek card and a really
there
big...
There has been. Yeah. I mean, in the past, I think when Eddie Alvarez beat RDA for the belt, that was the Friday. Then there was the Saturday. Or was it Thursday, Friday, Saturday? There might have been three. I'm not sure, but it was like...
On
International Fight Week, they normally hammer it because obviously they've got so many fighters in town for meet and greets and stuff like that. So I don't know. I know there's quite a few coming up because obviously when's Jake Paul versus
that's August.
That's August. Yeah,
Nate
that's a while.
Paul is August. Yeah.
What are you saying about KSI at the weekend? Did you watch KSI?
I didn't watch it. I saw what happened, obviously, with the really good elbow finish. A lot of MMA fighters probably would have been proud of.
That was beautiful.
Yeah. Clean elbow, sick.
I don't know how you can knock someone out with an elbow and kind of not react because it's going to, like, it was a forearm smash. You might be like, ooh.
In it.
You got like, his tooth in your fucking arm.
Ah, oh, man, it's like, I understand you're probably not going to stand. Well, I mean, like, you've got to have some in your head. You've got to, when the referee raises your arm, you've got to surely be like, it's an elbow. Yeah. Sorry.
Listen, your face broke my arm. Sorry. And I don't think he was intending. And I've seen dirty boxing. I've seen people throw elbows in the past. I saw Mr. T fucking slam Roddy Piper in a boxing match in WrestleMania. That was illegal. But I don't think he intended to. I don't think he intended to elbow him because it was the movement and the motion, obviously.
Yeah, it was kind of in the clinch, wasn't it? And it was...
And it was just the way it went across his face. I was like, fuck. Because when I woke up and there was a load of hype about it, I was like, I've got to see this. And then I saw there's an interview where we're like, a lot of people are saying it's an elbow. And he's like, no, man. No, it was all right hand. I was like, you need to see this, my dude. Because adrenaline can carry you through a lot of things.
Yeah.
But this is not one of them. And I have seen since he's come out and said that the controversial elbow has kind of tarnished it a bit, which I don't know. He looked...
But the fact that they couldn't see that on the night and it still got announced as he was the winner, it should have had the same result surely as like a clash of heads or, you know, a knee to the balls or...
Before...
In boxing anyway.
Yeah, before it was announced, they'd even rewatched it on the replay and they were like, I think that could have been a forearm. Oh, that could have been an elbow. And you're like, you got Michael Buffer going, ladies and gentlemen. You're like, dude, just give it a, like, this isn't good. Yeah. He elbowed him in the chops. So, but then KSI was looking to Tommy Fury.
Yeah.
Which I think at the minute, the little pool that Tommy Fury is swimming in, just taking these guys out, is cash rich.
Yeah.
It seems daft for him not to.
Yeah.
And obviously he didn't have a bad showing against Jake Paul. I mean, I think it legitimised Jake Paul more than it did anything for Tommy. But the way that KSI was boxing was unorthodox, to say the least, but it would make an interesting fight. And I think sometimes that's all it takes. Mm-hmm. Like, it literally doesn't matter. You're just keen to go, all right, well, I'll tune in.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I think the smart thing that Jake Paul's done is obviously signed with the PFL as well within that super fight league. So, you know, he's lost to Tommy Fury. If he loses to Nate as well, it kind of does diminish him a little bit, I think. And it takes away that element of like the guy who's beaten all these stars.
Yeah.
So if he's always got the PFL to fall back on and kind of relinquishes career within MMA.
Yeah. And I've seen
that. There's obviously opportunity for if the boxing match against Nate's really good and it warrants a rematch, they could always rematch in the cage as well, which is, you know.
I mean, Jake Paul seems to be one of them kids that falls in a barrel of dummies and comes out sucking a tit. So he seems to, it's not like he's not blessed with good fortune, but I mean, he seems to put himself in decent positions. And especially when you consider someone like CM Punk that went from wrestling, that was an older dude that had completely fucking battered his body for the past however many years. Had a fantastic training camp with Rufus Sport. And he tried. He went out twice. He had a go. I think someone like Jake Paul, if he can pass a test, I'm not saying that he's juicing or anything, but obviously he's a fucking oversized unit. And if he can get through all the tests and he can perform, I think there's nothing really stopping him. He's quite young. Mm. There's quite a bit that he could train and learn and get the basics and being an explosive athlete that we've seen him be, that he could probably pick up stuff pretty quick.
Yeah, so. I mean, personally, I think he'd do better in MMA than he would in boxing.
Do you think?
I think down to his, obviously he's a young guy, he's got the boxing ability that he's obviously shown. It's not to an elite level, but he's obviously got that. But you look at a lot of MMA fighters, they don't have elite boxing or elite striking. But I know he's got a wrestling background as well.
Yeah.
And I think if he finds the right coaches and the right training partners and stuff like that, I think he could probably be quite successful.
To really fine tune it.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I think that one of the biggest, just the biggest levelers is jiu-jitsu or wrestling, just to be dominating, just to be taken into a deep water is we see it so often. We just see it so often when, like, you see these people that get taken down. And that's why I think bare knuckle is taking off so much more, because the fear of being taken down or that having your legs taken away from you is taken out of it. But you've still got that either, well, just wraps or no gloves. So you've got the chance to take someone's head off, but at the same time, you're not worrying about them taking your legs out. So it's kind of a nice hybrid in between. But the thing is, he's making waves. It keeps everyone interested, and especially in that weird influencer boxing world that everyone thought the arse was going to drop out of it immediately, it's maintained interest because influencers are just that. They've got the biggest following, and it could be that your following is made up of, I don't know, 20 million 15 to 18-year-old girls. They're still going to tune in.
Yeah, and now we know that elbows are allowed as well, which is pretty cool.
It was such a good elbow. I'm surprised Connor didn't say it. I didn't see his Instagram. He probably did. But so there's that. And then obviously this weekend we've got Hill.
Yes, Mackenzie Dern versus Angela Hill. That's going to be a good scrap. Tough one for, I don't know, man. I think anytime anyone ever faces someone like Mackenzie Dern, it's the same with like Cron Gracie or, you know, Damian Maia. There's always that massive aspect of like, if you get taken down, you're probably going to get subbed kind of aura around it. But I think Angela Hill's like, she's good. She's coming off a win. You know, she's always been a really tough opponent. Like, she's never really been able to finish people so much, but she's never been able, well.
Yeah, she's not been a pushover, has she?
Yeah, but she's never been in that situation herself where she's getting finished and, you know.
She's a lot of experience as well.
Yeah, so I think that's going to be a good fight. I haven't properly looked at the rest of the card yet on that one, but yeah, I'm looking forward to that one this weekend as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, and then I think next week is Kaikara France and Pantoja.
That's
yeah, good. That's going to be a pretty electric.
That's going to be like something on Fast Forward, isn't it?
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
I love both of them. And it's just a lighter weight. It's like, it seems so strange when you strip people down and you make them smaller that their speed is.
Yeah.
It's fucking lightning. So, yeah, I've always been a big fan of Kaikara France. And obviously, with his camp, with everything, he's dialed in.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not broken that place yet where, you know, when Chad Mendes fought Connor, and I think he made $500,000 base, and you saw him change. Like, he went from being super hungry and fighting every other week and, like, really getting out there to being a bit more like, I might have a week off.
He's kind of changed
him a little bit. Whereas Kaikara France has been up there, but not quite made that transition just yet. So you still see that uber talented, uber hungry, determined. And then he's coming against a brick wall like Pantoja. That's just, I mean, his name itself is like the coolest nickname you could fucking have in the first place. And it's just his name. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. So obviously we'll see what's coming up.
I mean, yeah, man. Yeah. Oh, the other thing I was going to mention, obviously we spoke about 291 briefly, but Alex Pereira is obviously moving up to light heavyweight.
Yes.
And taking on Yan. So obviously I wanted to get your thoughts on that fight and how you think it may or may not play out according to, yeah.
Yan's a fucking big unit. He's a big old lump. And
so I didn't actually realize until we looked at the card earlier, because obviously it got announced this week that there was the BMF title, but I didn't realize that that fight had been made as well. I saw a tweet earlier in the week from Yan saying, or was it Yan? Or it was someone making this statement. It's like, the only other guy to beat Izzy, it would be funny if I can beat.
That's a good point.
The only other guy to beat Izzy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, with someone like Yan, like I say, he's a big old fucking lump, but he also doesn't buy into the mental warfare. I mean, he's a cold dude if he needs to be, but he seems to be able to switch it off. He's fucking Polish. He's like, you know what? I don't need to hear a dog barking. I'll just wait till they bite. And he kind of, kind of dig that, because like, he's obviously, he's been around for long enough that he's not going to get pushed about, I don't think. And obviously the frame is a lot different at 205 to 185. So if Pereira can get through Yan, then that's screaming out. He's screaming out then to leapfrog Yan to be able to get for a title shot. But it's going to take a lot, because Yan's grappling and Yan's takedowns are pretty solid. I mean, he ragdolled Izzy when he needed to. I know he didn't put him away, but it was essentially like a really intense spar he just maintained control. And obviously Pereira's not, I prefer to see him on his feet than on his back. So I don't know, man, it's going to be super interesting. I mean, I can't really necessarily say either way, because obviously if Pereira starts fast and can land something dirty, then yeah, it could be his all night. But Yan's not any sort of chump. He's not really a pushover.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I was thinking it from that aspect, like the size difference. But when he came up against Izzy is a middleweight.
Yeah.
Sounded weird, but he is a middleweight.
He is, yeah.
And like, Alex Pereira is obviously someone who is cutting a lot and sacrificing a lot in like physically to make it to middleweight. So I think being at more of his natural weight, and I don't think Yan will be able to take advantage like what he did against Izzy. I don't think it would be as easy as it would be against Pereira. But then again, it's like, it's not going to be Israel Adesanya trying to take you down. It's going to be Jan Blachowicz, who's like massive and is
look
a former champion as well. Yeah.
So Luke Rockhold's not a small dude.
It's a tough one to call, I think. Like, because I can see how both guys are going to win it, but yeah, I'm more excited just to see Pereira at light heavyweight, and I just want to see how he's going to like progress within that division.
Yeah, and I could see him making waves. I'm just, for the first fight at light heavyweight to be against Jan, it's a big ask. But
yeah,
that's all he seemed to do. He's come in and he's obviously had a couple of fights, but then to get Strickland and Izzy and he's putting his money where his mouth is.
The thing is as well, obviously we know that Glover Teixeira is in Pereira's corner and Glover's fought Jan. I know it was quite a quick match, but you know, he himself has had that training camp in order to prepare for Jan. And, you know, if he can kind of lay that onto Pereira as well, and I think they've got a big advantage in that respect as well. So, you know, it's interesting. So
if Pereira wins in emphatic fashion, like Glover.
It's strange because, sorry, go on, what were you going to ask?
What would you say that the title shot's next? Would you say that if Pereira can get a win over Jan?
Yeah, I think
a finish, regardless of when.
I think because he's a former champion and Alex Pereira's kind of built himself his own like persona and character within the UFC. Like I think he's very marketable, and yeah, if he gets a win over Jan, who is a former champion as well, I think, you know, that could probably be line him up for potential whoever's got the belt at that point, because I think the Jamal Hill fight and Jiří fight would have happened by then. So I think Pereira probably would be the...
Yeah, when is that? When is Jiří?
I'm not sure. I don't think it's been actually properly announced. I think it may be like August. Okay. Is the August pay-per-view.
So it's all pretty similar. Yeah. It's all relevant around that time.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, there's a lot of good potential matchups and stuff coming our way.
Good. I'm looking forward to it. Mm. So what else? Is that everything, dude? We covered everything this week.
I think so, yeah, man. Yeah.
And you didn't have to listen to an alarm for too long, we hope. We can't really hear it.
It's just there's an empty building nearby and there's no one in there to turn the alarm off. So it goes off for like a good couple of hours every day. Well, not every day, but if a fly buzzes past it. Oh, man.
You know all these empty buildings? And I don't know if anyone can facilitate this. There's probably someone out there that can. Because high streets are nowadays, they're completely barren. Like there's hardly anything there. Like you see that there's the axe throwing places cropping up in like what would have been a shop.
Yeah, there's Sixes has just opened up in around this. It's a cricket one.
Right.
So it's just, you're playing like indoor cricket, but...
In a shop.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay. I wanted to...
And there's a bar.
Well, that's always good. I wanted to do like a close quarters battle in a shop or a shopping centre derelict or like a derelict hospital or something. So it's a bit like playing Call of Duty where instead of it being airsoft, which is BBs, it's like the BB paintballs.
Oh, okay.
So you've not got automatic rifles in a shop because it's small. So you've got like, there could be a shotgun option and there could be a pistol option.
That's cool.
Like imagine Toys R Us, old Toys R Us, and you've got to like either capture the flag or something. And like you're going in and out the different places. And obviously it's not like you can just spray someone to shit with like 300 rounds of a M16, but you've got pistol, like you can pick your poison. So like there could be Resident Evil versions where you're fighting off zombies with them, or there could be like the Call of Duty option where you team against team or like capture the flag. But there's just so many places that we've all grown up around, like CNA and Debenhams, that were massive areas that basically you could probably have three of the shops together that like you've got to get into their base or whatever. And I don't know.
It's like you could do like a whole shopping mall, abandoned shopping mall kind of style. Yeah.
Or like, even if it was one small shop, like the amount of shops, I mean, I've run shops in the past. I've opened shops for companies that I've been a part of. In Westfields and stuff like that, it's not just the ground floor. Like we had probably two or three floors in one of the shops in Newcastle, and it was the fucking coolest space. You could hide for hours and no one could find you. But that would be cool that like it's these ideas to make use of space that, I mean, ideally what they should all be done is turn into probably apartments for homeless people, which would be ideal. But in my stag world fucking imagination of like what I would want to do as a 12-year-old boy, I want to play army. So if I could do that,
yeah,
and then maybe get a go-kart track downstairs.
I remember when I used to, I think it was Halo 2 on Xbox, and we made a game called Paintball.
Okay.
Because you could create your own custom games, and you only had a pistol.
Yeah.
And it was one shot kill.
Nice.
And it was the best game, because it's hard to like obviously kill someone with a pistol.
Yeah, too right.
But you could like nail someone from like really far away.
Oh man.
And it's one shot kill obviously, so you just like,
yeah, you can't do anything.
Well, it was sick.
We'd have the same thing, because it must have been that someone had played Halo that came over to us on Rainbow Six. I think it was Lycan Scott. And we used to play a game called Charlie Big Potatoes. And basically, everyone made an agreement that we would play it on free-for-all so everyone could kill anyone, but you only allowed a pistol. So there was one level on Vegas, I think it was called Shoot House, where it was like two big buildings where you could go on the roof, and basically there would be one person that's on Charlie Big Potatoes and he'd have a machine gun. Once he got you, you were then on with him. The last two surviving would be on the rooftops, and on that game you could take cover. So I think you pulled in one of the triggers and you'd hide. So like, bear in mind, we're all monitoring, like the whole rest of the team that are dead are watching these two people that are alive. And so we're going, right, yeah, he's got his back to it, put your back to it. And like, it's really, really fucking policed. And then you just see these two guys going, tsh, tsh. And it could take hours just for like one person to kill the other. But you'd normally, halfway through the evening, get some rogue bellend. It was normally someone related to me. And like, you'd be sat there and you're hiding in your room with your pistol with a couple of bullets, and like someone had come through with a fucking Gatling gun or something. You go, oh, what are you doing? What are you doing? They go, I got fucking bored. This is shit. I'm doing something else. This is fucking boring. And you're like, everyone else is really enjoying it.
Yeah,
and then
someone
just comes on with a shotgun and just fucking ices out three dudes. Like, what the fuck? What, man? That's not fair. So yeah, we used to make up a lot of shit games, or snipers only. You ever play that?
And oh yeah, to be fair, we did. Yeah, did you play snipers only? That's pretty cool.
But
because when you're doing close range,
just jumping around each other. But we always, again, it was probably the same relative. That like there was a couple of maps where it was a good distance apart that you go, right, don't cross the halfway point. You're like, okay, no problem. You get set up and you get like scoped in, and you're enjoying it, you're taking the winners out, and like, you'd normally be playing one for one against someone, because they'd get you, then you'd get them back or whatever. But then again, you'd get the same fucking arsehole come running around the back of your thing with that.
Flame
and they come teabag you and like, they put a piece of C4 on your head. You're like, how did you just kill me from the other side of the map? It's like, I wasn't on the other side of the map. This is fucking boring. Can we do something else?
Yeah.
All right, man. So yeah, so if anyone does know how to change a shopping centre into a go-kart track with paintball attached or anything cool like that, let us know.
New business plan.
Yeah, mate, this is what we want. We just want cool shit. But yeah, other than that, dude, it's a pleasure as always.
Yeah, man. Yeah, should we call it there?
That's it, man. Well, you lot take care and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, thanks for joining. Check out the website. Check out the Full Reptile main channel as well. The War Room's up. So yeah, loads of stuff to check out with us, guys.
Get involved. Nice one, dude.
All right.
Take it easy, man.
Nice one.
I felt like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.